Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host with the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very, very awesome musician, composer, extraordinary artist, Mr. Brent Paschke. Say hello.
Hey, what up?
Our studio audience loves you already, man. So how have you been, man?
Been good, man. Been good.
You've been playing?
Been playing. It's been a little slow on the live side. We did, you know, NERD tour last summer. I don't know what's on the books for Pharrell and what he wants to do next. So
that's so exciting. You're playing with one of the coolest artists. You're playing in one of the coolest bands. You got to be like, yeah, life is good.
I don't take it for granted. I definitely don't, man. I make sure I'm at every one of those gigs. I don't want to give up any of those. But yeah, it's great. The sessions are great. The touring's great. You know,
what are rehearsals like?
Rehearsals are cool, man. Like we have a great band. Most of the, like, I'm the only dude that's not from Philly. Like, it's a bunch of Philly musicians that grew up together. Playing in church and whatnot, these guys are just
slamming monsters.
It's brutal, and it's like, for me, it's like a lesson every time. Like,
but that's what you want to be in this.
Yeah, it's
like
exactly
that.
Where I want to be. I mean, June keyboardist. He's like you know, played with D'Angelo for a bit. Like, I mean, these guys, like, you know, they all came up under the Roots. Like, they're dialed in, man.
I remember you telling me, you were like, I'm the rock guy in the band. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah. That's the thing. It's like they come from a different, you know, it's a different kind of background, right?
Right.
Like I grew up like rock, like, you know, seventh grade was like, you know, all about AC/DC, Dirty Deeds,
yeah,
you know, and like
the classics,
the rock stuff, like Van Halen and whatnot. So all of my pocket and vibe kind of stems from that era, right? Like 70s pop music and rock music. But they have a different kind of swag. Like they stem from more of that, like the thing that kind of like the Roots kind of brought in, you know, that like really laid back kind of like swaggy.
It's like gospel with like super clean hits.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like dirty and like super tight at the same time. Yeah. It's like this perfect balance.
So it's a little, like there's a little different background there, but like these guys are just, they're so like, I always know if the drummer Daryl, like if he dropped a stick or something's going wrong, like, cause that's the minute I hear a little sway off the click,
right,
that's
right.
The only time, but otherwise it's just like,
it's spot on.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
That's awesome.
It's unbelievable. Yeah. And when we get it, it's like, it's really great. So it's a great band. It's a pleasure.
Well, let's take you way back, because you know what? Before all of the fame and fortune and all the, you know, big gigs, you were just a kid that was listening to music in North Dakota, I think, right?
Yep, North Dakota.
So
yeah.
You grew up in this small town. What was the name of the city?
Grand Forks, yeah.
So what was the moment of zen that made you want to become a musician, or what was the song or the band that did it for you?
Well, it was like, I mean, I tell like kids now, like, I was kind of fortunate that I knew what I wanted to do right away. Like I literally and it's rare. Like it's kind of, it was, I remember like kind of like figuring out that like that was a rare thing for me when you, I'd hear people like, well, I went to college and I changed my degree so many times, and that's common, you know, but like I was just like at 12 or 13 when I got a guitar, it was just like literally the minute the first guitar got in my hands, there was no question. Like,
well, what was the thing that made you want to even get a guitar? Do you remember?
Know, it was my older brother played drums, and he had some friend of his. God, the guy's name was like Mike Koppelman. I think he's like an arranger now too. Came over with a guitar, and you know, and then Kiss albums.
Yeah.
Like I was right in that era, you know, I'm 71.
Yeah. That's like an age of rock and roll. I still miss that age of rock and roll.
Yeah. I was like right there. That was like, it was rock guitars, you know, and you know, AC/DC, Led Zeppelin, Kiss, and like those. And then later it went into like the little bit more of the hair metal stuff.
Yeah. But
like, you know, I was kind of weaned in on that classic rock.
I just saw Peter Frampton.
Yeah,
and classic. Jason Bonham's band, the Led Zeppelin Experience, opened for him. And wasn't expecting them to just slay the way they did. But it was like, oh my God, it's like hearing Zeppelin live. This is unbelievable. Yeah. It really made me kind of like put that reverence of that 70s rock up on a pedestal again. Because it's like, man, there's no music that's like that right now. I miss that music.
No, and people like underestimate, like, even like... Now, like, I'm so much more in tune, like, because I'm in the studio and recording so much and on stage playing so much. Like, I'm so much more in tune with, like, groove and feel and whatnot. But, like, bands like AC/DC, bands like Led Zeppelin, bands like Van Halen, like, we think of, like, everybody kind of gives it, oh, it's rock and big guitar. But, like, dude, that so pocket.
Epic. The pocket's like, so ridiculous.
Oh, my God. Like, AC/DC's pocket is
so ridiculous.
Unbelievable.
All the Back in Black stuff. And like, I've heard legends of how AC/DC recorded their guitars.
Yeah.
Like, they had them hanging out of windows. They were miking brick, like, the brick walls underneath where the guitar amps were. Like, they just did so much stuff to create this monster guitar sound. And they, I mean, it was just... It was epic.
It's epic. And and that too, right? The greatest rock guitar sounds. Like, it's just like, that's when you're chasing sounds. When I'm chasing like heavy guitar sounds, like I'm chasing like Van Halen, Fair Warning, or AC/DC, Back in Black.
Yeah.
And like, yo, getting those sounds is very difficult.
It's
very expensive. It's very expensive.
Well, and to them in that era, it wasn't that expensive. It was just like mostly British amps and,
recording it in 1970, whatever, early 70s or whatever, you just buy a 68 Marshall or, you know what I mean? Like, it's not like they were like now what they are, you know what I mean?
Well, it's also like the rock and roll arrangements of that era too.
Yeah.
It must have been something that was so attractive to just the you know, oral concept, just like, oh my God, I can hear everything arranged. Like listening to Zeppelin play, just four people playing all those parts.
Yeah.
I mean, it kind of like, it transformed me to a totally different place.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to learn from that too, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot to learn from that simplicity. There's a lot of like, I think there's kind of two styles of production, you know, out there right now.
Yeah.
Like you got like, Max Martin or Dr. Luke, right? Like,
right. Super clean, sheen.
Super clean. Yep. Like the whole spectrum of sound is filled. It may not sound like it, but it's like 120 instruments, like all micro layered.
Yes, yes.
Picking every little spectrum out. You know what I mean? Like, and you listen to it and it's just like this wall of like sonics, you know? And then there's like the real simple producers like Timbaland and Pharrell and whatnot, you know? Both of them I love, you know, but there's a lot to learn from like keeping it really simple.
Yeah.
And like, it's just like these parts work. And when you can keep it, Ryan Leslie was great at that too. Like you keep it that simple, you can get your track banging so well, cause nothing's in the way, right? Like you put like the proper bass in there and the proper kick, if they're not like colliding,
it's everything.
Then you just push the faders up and they hit, you know? I think there's a lot to learn from that. Like a lot of people, because nowadays we can record so many tracks.
I think it takes away from it.
It can.
Because like when I record on tape, it forces you to choose like, okay, I got 16 tracks or 24 tracks.
Absolutely.
And so it's like, okay, I need just the essentials.
Have you recorded on tape lately?
Oh yeah, man. I love recording on tape.
Yo, I recorded on tape with my buddy Shy Carter in Nashville. He's got a 2-inch, and it was like I hadn't recorded on tape in like 15 years, and it was like a dream.
It's the best. It's the best.
Unbelievable.
Especially for guitar, especially for drums, especially for vocals. I mean, there's really, it's just,
bro, it's the best. Listen, I get like, and you can edit and in Pro Tools and whatnot, like, or Logic or whatever, but like, dude, like recording to tape where it's just immediate.
Yes.
And it sounds ridiculous.
And you know what? Like the mixing without the automation becomes a performance.
Just.
And even just the sound of the tape. It really gives you like an amazing perspective. It's like a religious experience recording.
It's unbelievable. Well, and it's also like, here's the other thing that people tend to not think about how much this affects you, but it does. Like latency.
Oh yeah, big time.
Trust me, bro. Yes. Like that's a big deal, bro. Like you know, so like when you're recording to tape and you double it, you're spot on, man. Yeah. Like you're spot on. The only difference is the difference between the playhead and the record head, right? But you're hearing everything spot on. You're hearing yourself through the board. Doubling is just. It's just unbelievable, man.
I also love that there's like a little bit of a mysticism between the brands of tapes, the tape machines. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because like if you get a hard drive, it's all the same. It's all the same hard drive.
Yeah.
But with tapes, you actually have different fibers, different, you know, like I learned about this tape. It's called Scotch 250.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, it's the same Scotch tape that, you know, that made Scotch tape, you know?
Yeah.
But they used to make this really pristine recording tape.
Yeah.
And it went out of print and it's become like this legendary thing.
Ah.
So I bought 10 reels of it because you know, and it was like trying to go to get drugs from a drug dealer. You know, I got this Scotch 250. Oh, I'll meet you on this. You know, like because it's such a rarity and you just realize that era had that magic where it was like things were made well, things were, you know, engineered right, you know, even just like the studios, the microphones, all of it. It was like this real industrial revolution for music.
I think it was. I mean, I think like that time, I kind of felt like when I heard a 5.1 mix of Hotel California and then, you know, like some of these sessions go around that are just like are like the masters, right? Because the record label had to bounce them all down. Like, so you get like the Doobie Brothers, like Long Train Running or something like that. And like right around that 70s, I don't know what time in the 70s, but I think things just really clicked where everybody, like they got it. They were like these U-47s and these 67s and these 251s and these Prees and these, like they got it. And there was those engineers at that time that were getting paid. Like
they
were
Tom Dowd, you know.
Yeah.
He was the man, dude.
These guys were getting paid and they knew what they were doing, man. And they, like, dude, like I have some masters of, God, what is it? It's Long Train Running. That's what it is. Long Train Running by the Doobie Brothers. And it's a 16, it was done on 16 track. And bro, it's unbelievable how good the raw, like the acoustic, there's this acoustic recording in the background and then the electric, that like kind of classic thing.
Totally.
Like it's unbelievable. Like they just basically bounce this down the Pro Tools because the tape was getting old, right? So you can just pull up the fader and listen to it. It's like the greatest acoustic sound.
And you're like, and to them, it was just like, yeah, let's do it. This is what works. And it's like ordinary to them. But to us, it becomes like this magical thing now.
You put it, I swear to God, you practically have the faders at zero and it sounds like the radio mix.
And it's warm.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
All right. So you said your neighborhood buddy brought in a guitar. Do you remember the guitar he brought in?
I think it was a Strat.
And you were just like, oh my God, that's the sexiest instrument ever. I gotta
get it. I remember it was a brown guitar. It was like, but I think it was a Strat, yeah.
And what was the first song or a band that you were I need to just learn this?
Well, you know, that was like the classic, like Smoke on the Water, yep. Stairway to Heaven. Yep. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
All those classic, you know, AC/DC songs and stuff like that. You just learn riffs, you know?
Were you in like a band? Like when in middle school?
Yeah, of course,
school?
Man. I had to get a band. And, you know, I think one of the first bands was like Vendetta or something.
Yeah, you know? Dude. You know, good name, dude.
Yeah, then I went into Vicious Circle, was more my high school group, you know.
Did you play like high school dances and stuff like that, or
yeah
parties?
Yeah, we would. Yeah long hair, spandex, the whole works. That's man. Awesome, we were 100% in the 80s, man.
You were legends in your own
we did it.
That's awesome. And then what was the moment where you were like, okay, I want to take this seriously, I want to study this?
Well, it was right away. It was definitely right away. I think another pivotal moment for me was jazz band in high school. I think that was and I had this great teacher, Lin Kwame. He passed away recently, but he was just like, he was like one of my first teachers, and he would teach me like fingerstyle arrangements. And like at that point, you're like a 14-year-old kid and you just want to play Scorpion songs or something, you know? And he's like having you play like, you know, Love Me Do finger style by the Beatles or something, you know.
Well, he's teaching you technique, you know.
Oh, it was like, that was awesome that he did that. I mean, there's so many things that I do to this day because of that, you know. Like the fact that I had to learn like otherwise I would have just learned root five power chord songs, right? Like, but he's making you learn like fingerstyle arrangements, chord melody things. So you're playing the chord and the melody, you know, and to do that, you'd have to use your right hand fingers too. So you'd learn like that technique, and that stays with you the rest of your life. Also just like learning those different chords at that time. And then in 10th grade, I went and talked to the jazz band teacher, cause you could have electives at that point. And I was like, I'd like to take jazz band. And he sat down on this pivotal, man. Like, he's like, oh yeah, we'll play these songs. And he just started playing standards. I remember it plain as day. He said, we'll play something like, you know, like Route 66. I think that's like 1-6-2-5 progression or something. It's a standard jazz progression, right? And he just starts to play it on the piano. And I remember at that moment thinking like, oh my God, like that's what I need. Like just that's hearing awesome. Those chords, yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
because it's like taking you down a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
Like, what is that?
It's just funky and it had a groove to it. Like, and I was like sold. And so like, I did so much studying. I'd get these jazz band charts and they were funny, cause they had like I would play all the chords written out, which I probably didn't need to, you know, I just but I was just learning all these like major minors and minor nines and minors, you know, and trying to like learn and
how big was the jazz band?
It was a good size, you know. It's probably like a 20.
That's a big sound. Like, that's what's awesome about that too.
Yeah. So and I'm just like hanging in there, bro. Like I was just like some long haired metal kid, you know. I'm like literally like
that. But that's like you're sinking into the sophistication of the art. Yeah. That's what's cool about that, you know.
So it was like jazz band, and then. And then a buddy of mine around that same time, he was like, yo, have you heard this group Steely Dan? And I didn't know like who they were, but I grew up listening. And he had the album, A Decade of Steely Dan.
Oh yeah.
And that was just the greatest hits, right?
Yep.
But it's a really great greatest hits CD. And he's like, oh,
you were in high school running on this?
I was right in high school. Wow. Yeah. So that was like 10th grade also. And he played it, and I remember, like, you know, when you like sometimes you hear music and you have these visualizations of like places you were, and I had like these, like, I mean, it was like going back to being 5 years old, being in like the back
just
of
just pure joy,
yeah,
pure joy,
hearing them songs on the radio. Yes. And I was like, oh my God, I love these songs, like, you know, and that's where everything kind of like, because I started like. Going from being just a straight metalhead at that point and going like, whoa, there's something really cool.
Yeah. That's funny that you got into Steely Dan, because I was getting into Steely Dan right around the same time, like junior, senior year of high school.
Yeah.
And I just remember feeling like, yo, if you're not hip to this, we're never going to connect. You know, it's like, if you can't listen to this and know there's something great about it, then we're never going to be great friends, you know? So like I found like music connections and friendships having the same parallels.
Yeah,
you know?
Dude. Yeah. That, then getting into funky, I really love the funky stuff. Like, you know? So that's where it like kind of started to pivot for me. I mean, maybe it wasn't even anything that like drove me towards the profession or wanting to do it. It was maybe like something that helped a ton.
Right.
Too.
You know what I mean? It's like giving your ear a totally different perspective.
Yeah.
Too.
Well, like, you know, so you get this jazz band chart in front of you and then you're like, oh, well, solo over it. Well, you can't just like blow like
pentatonic.
You know what I mean? So you got to like learn and you know what I mean? So that got me ahead a lot. You know, I got a Frank Gambale book. I recently took a private from Frank in LA. It was just,
he's a badass dude.
He's just such a monster and he's an incredible guy. I ran into him at NAMM and he was like one of those guys I had to go up to, you know?
Yeah.
And so I got his book, like it was like some like theory book 1 and 2 or something like that. And he just takes you over how to solo over each chord. And I just worked on that. But that helped me a lot, man.
My lead guitarist also studied with him. Sings his praises in the same way.
He's just
such a badass.
He's such a badass.
He's like a Zen master when it comes to guitar.
He's a Zen master. People get, you know, he might get a little bit of that flack for, oh, you play fast or whatever. But it's not that like, his note choice and like. It's very strategic. Yeah. He knows when he's ripping through something, he's like, there's
he's not wanking.
He's not wanking, man. He's got meaning to it. And that blew me away too. He was like my drummer is a huge Frank fan. And I can't remember what song it was. I asked Frank, I said, my drummer wanted to know how you did that solo. He's like, oh, I don't know. I ad-libbed it. And I'm like,
You didn't work that out?
No, I never work out the solos before I go into the studio and play them. I'm like, are you
kidding
me?
That's like, crazy.
I have to work out mine. Like,
right.
I just
I'm the same way. When
chops,
I do records, yeah. I'm sure this is what I always do. I overplay the first couple takes I do a solo. Mm-hmm. And then I get to a place where I'm like, all right, now I got that out of me. And then it's like, okay, say something.
Yeah.
Make a phrase. Yeah. Like compose something.
Yeah.
But it's like such a crazy thing when you hear guys do that.
I know, man. And it's hard because like I like those solos that are like I like those composed solos that you sing. Like
me too.
You can sing another Brick in the Wall solo.
Totally.
Like, you know?
Yeah.
And David, I'm sure I don't know if it sounds like that's a composed solo.
Yeah.
But like, you know what I mean? Like it's just it's part of the song, Hotel California.
Yes, totally.
I mean, I know AC/DC songs aren't composed, but God damn, those songs.
They're so but you know what? It's like there's something like this. It's like this perfect balance of fire and ice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like sometimes it just takes this like cool finesse thing, and then sometimes it's got like this fiery edge where it's like.
Yeah.
But I'm always amazed when guys do that stuff live, and then they say, "Oh yeah, just you know, those were the changes, and that's what just kind of like came out." It's like what? I'm the same way. I'm very much like I have to methodically kind of get to that place and write something that I'm like, okay, that's worthy for other people to listen to.
Yeah, I like having those, man. The ones that you can sing, the ones that are part of the song, you know? Like you can't go play Hotel California and get, you know, in a band and then get to the solo and not play that solo.
Right.
That's like, you kidding me, you know?
And sometimes some people just have it. Like there's a great solo of Fred Wesley playing trombone over Pass the Peas with Maceo Parker.
Which one? Life on Planet Groove?
Yes, yes. Yeah, he leaves that album out. He leaves the one out on every break.
Yeah.
And like I never noticed it. I was just like, God, what do I love about this solo? And I'm like, oh my God, he leaves the one out on every measure in his solo. And it just makes the phrasing just like, it's succinct. It's like just insanely cool.
Yeah, you know,
and I never would have thought of that.
Like now that I'm going to listen to that on the way home, but yeah, now that I think about it. Yeah. Cause he does that, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He waits.
And it's like he doesn't jump on that first step.
Yeah.
He's like, I'm going to wait and then I'm going to throw something at you.
And I love, you know what I love about the horn players too, when they solo is they use very, they use very minimal notes.
Yes.
Like, and it'll be, and it's funny because as a guitar player, when you sit down to figure it out, you're like,
I have all the notes.
Yeah, and they're like, they're only using these few notes, yes. But it's partially the way that they bend yes. into the notes, whether they, and the way you imitate that on guitar, there's a, one of my favorite teachers, this guy, John Della Selva, does this so well. He'll like bend or slide into like little notes
right.
like that out of the
pentatonic. Like the four or the five.
And all of it makes right. a difference on guitar. It's like yes. how you bend into it or how you slide into it. Like it's really detailed, but like covering like those vibes that a horn player does, it's a lot more difficult than you think.
Let's play something. I want to play something that you guys have been
sure.
working on. What do you want to do first?
I don't know what we've been working on. Okay,
I've got NERD Rockstar. I've got Surfin' featuring Pharrell Williams. Snoop Dogg, California Roll. What do you want to talk about? Got some good choices here, by the way.
Yeah, I don't know. What do you want to talk about?
No, you tell me. You tell me, man.
Rockstar.
Let's go with that. Let's go with Rockstar.
Sure. Yeah,
it's already up and loaded. So talk to me about this. You've been in NERD since its inception, right?
Yeah. Well, okay. So NERD is Pharrell, Chad, and Shay. So it's their group. This is the most popular NERD record. It's the first one. This was put out with no live instruments, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so this was put out in Europe. No live instruments. And then, then when we met Pharrell, Pharrell and Chad, they told us about this album and they were like, yo, we want you guys to put Spy Mob. See, they met, we kind of collided. They found our band Spy Mob. And then they said, we want you guys to put live instruments on it. So then we did a version with live instruments and then they re-released it.
Wow.
And recently there was supposed to be a box set that was coming out with both versions and whatnot. And that got pulled. I have no idea why. I don't know.
But the real instrument version is the one that's famous, right?
Yeah. It's funny though, because sometimes I'll hear commercials like, because Rockstar Lap Dance, especially Lap Dance, gets used a lot in commercials right. and in movies. That's been in so many movies.
That's gotta be a cool feeling.
Yeah,
you're sitting there watching a movie, you're like, oh yeah, that was me.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm hearing like Freedom. There's a single that Pharrell did called Freedom, and I hear that recently a lot too. I'm like, oh wow.
You're like, yeah, that's me.
That's my guitar. but yeah. So, anyways, this was a really pivotal album for them too. Like, this album was put out in 2001, and combining like live instruments and program stuff
right.
in 2001, wasn't nearly as easy as it is now. Right. Like
right.
the only like software I think at that time, or that at least that I know about that did it well enough was, you could do Pro Tools and you did Beat Detective.
Right.
So
you just took me way back.
Right I know. There. Yeah. So like, this was a really interesting time because like, we knew when we, like, he doesn't think about, he's not a technical guy. Like, right.
He's
like
a creator.
Watching him use a mouse, a track mouse is like, it's painful. Sometimes.
You're like, let me do that for
you. Yeah, it's painful. Like, he's just not a technical guy. So he doesn't think about that stuff. But, we got to put live drums on here too. And we knew like how difficult that is because there's flam, and whatnot.
Yeah.
And we also knew that like a key to Pharrell and Chad's programming is their swagger. Cause right. they don't quantize.
Wow.
They don't. No. So like Happy, if you pull up the Happy session, nothing's quantized.
Wow.
Not one instrument. The kick drum's not directly on the one. So the kick drum's not on 1.1.1.1 or whatever that Logic or Pro Tools would say.
But it has that feel then.
It's got that feel. No, Pharrell will program. He will program like. I think in Happy, I do think it was actually the congas that were programmed first. They're all Logic instrument. So he programmed that boom, dum
dum dum dum. Right.
Dum 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 dum. And they're in key. It's the root and the fifth. So it's the F and the C.
Right.
So I think that kind of drove the key of the song, but. I know I wasn't there, but I can guarantee you, because I've seen this happen, I'm 99.9% certain that it happened like this. He programs that percussion part, and he turns off the click, and then he programs everything else.
Wow.
I see him do it all the time. So going back to In Search Of,
it's one of my favorite records, by the way.
Thank you. Thanks. It's such one of my favorite records too.
Such like, a great record.
Such an insane.
I mean it was like a monumental record.
I mean, when I first heard it, I was just like, these are, like, you'd hear the next song, you'd be like, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. Like this is unbelievable. Like,
I mean, it was talked about before. I don't even know if you remember this, but I remember reading Rolling Stone articles about the record before it was even released.
Oh, yeah, Eric.
So I knew about it.
Our drummer was so nervous because Quest from The Roots would say in interviews, like, the band I want to play in is NERD. Like,
wow.
Like, that's Eric, insane. Eric's like, dude, you don't want Quest Love saying that, you know? Eric's a bad mofo, though. So, but yeah, so we knew going in there, man, that we had to kind of, you know, that was going to be a thing, you know, and we couldn't mess with their group. You can't mess. Don't mess with Pharrell's Pocket or Chad's Pocket.
Right.
They're
wizards.
They're wizards. We all know their feel. Like, it's ridiculous, you know? So, you know, we had to, like, you know, we spent a lot of time, and we did this with Seeing Sounds too, the third NERD record. You know, we spent a lot of time where you kind of have to, like, Eric plays to it, and then we have to kind of look at the measure that's closest to Pharrell's and maybe shift things a little bit to, you know what I mean? But Eric was really good at playing like a Pharrell feel. Like, very, very good. And they also listened to Spy Mob. They listened to my band a lot.
So they know what they want.
Yeah, we were Steely Dan heads. They're Steely Dan heads. They love classic rock. We love classic rock. You know, they obviously have more hip-hop, you know, background.
But, I mean, it has that edge to it. It's got that ingenuity to
Pharrell,
it.
I mean, Pharrell and Chad's swag is very much like a 70s pop.
They're like a Donald Fagen, Walter Becker.
Yeah,
they're the hip hop Donald Fagen, Walter Becker.
They play like they're on top of the beat. Like they're like they got that 70s kind of swag. So it worked good. Like we just kind of gelled. Like,
well, and the funny thing too that's cool about you work with NERD, it's like most people would be lucky to work with one of them, either Chad or Pharrell.
Yeah,
but you're like in the room working with both of them seeing how they're bouncing ideas off of each other and then you have your unit kind of like bouncing off what their guy, you know, it's just like all creative energy just going crazy.
You're in there and like it's like Pharrell will have an idea, you know, Chad can always like Chad's a musical genius. Like it's so.
I remember you told me he did the drop it like it's hot.
Was wicked. Off the cuff too.
I know
that sometime you should get Andrew Coleman on this show to talk about classic stuff. You really should get Drew on. But like, yeah, he's ridiculous. So Chad can kind of decipher, you know. Oh, Brandon, play the nine on top, or you know what I mean. Chad can decipher some of that. Pharrell was speaking like more like colors, you know,
right.
You know, literally colors too. It should be green, you know, like that's, it feels like, more green, you know, but it's cool. You just decipher it
and right.
Like, he'll have different ways of explaining it. One time he said, Brent, I want the sound to be, you know, I want it to be Kurt Cobain meets Chuck Berry, you know? So
right.
I have to just decipher in my head, what does Pharrell think?
What does he mean?
What does he mean when he says that? You know,
okay. But you know those bags. Yeah, you know both those bags.
Yeah,
so.
I, you know, you kind of figure it out. You know, and sometimes you'll be playing not plugged in. Like I'll be playing the part and I'm not even plugged in, and you'll go, "I want that sound." You know, and then I'll look at Mike or Drew, the engineer, and I'll say, "API 512, direct in. Let's go."
Wow.
You know.
Wow.
Because I'll know he wants super clean.
Right.
And I know that they know that because that direct into the board thing was like the Doobie Brothers.
Yeah, that was the thing. That was all Motown.
Yeah, there's that all sound. That. They know that sound.
Right.
And they both Chad and Pharrell they're very keen to the classic stuff. Like,
right.
They know it. Like I have a 57 Tele that is my number one guitar, and like I swear I can go in with that guitar, and just because it's got such a classic sound, like it never really gets taken off the bench. Like, it's just so classic, and like, it's just got that vintage classic sound. It never gets taken off the bench. But if I sometimes try some new things, like, you can tell, like,
they're like, no, get that,
they can't really, they're not like technically putting their finger on anything. Right. So it's not like, that's not deterring them. It's purely just their ear, you know? So yeah, it's interesting.
All right. But well, anyways, let's play this. Let's play this. This is NERD Rockstar.
Welcome to first period, maggots. Physical education. For the next 42 hours, your butt belongs to me. I will not tolerate wusses. Do I make myself clear? Worm, what is your major malfunction?
You think the way you live's okay. You think posing will save the day. You think we don't see that you're the you can get away with it. You think the light won't be ever lit. It's almost over now, almost over now. Something on your chest, better get it off. There'll be no one left when we set it off. We ain't gonna take it no more, since it's almost over now, almost over now. You had plenty of time, there was no rush, but it was your dream to be like us. You're in dream. Better get it off. There'll be no one left when we set it off. We ain't gonna take it no more, since it's almost over now, almost over now. Just better get it off. Yeah. Set it off. Look, it's almost over now, almost over now. You don't succeed, cause you hesitate. You think we're flying.
Dude, such a great song. Such a great song. Yeah, man, you got to meet Randy Quaid in that, too.
Yeah,
man.
I know, right? I know, right?
You like Christmas Vacation.
I got my Christmas Vacation fix in. No lie. Love that guy.
Dude, what a great track. What a great band. Your guitar tone is sick.
Thanks.
What, do you remember what you used?
Yeah, that was the 57. That was my 57 Tele.
Any pedals? Any amps?
Yeah, it's the Fuzz Factory.
Hmm.
I knew when I went into that, like, I knew... When they said, do you want to come and do this? I was like, I knew in my head, I was like, I don't want to go into it because it's a different thing, right?
Right.
Like, it was like, that was the front edge of like mixing live with the hip hop thing. I mean, it was kind of getting around. The Roots were doing it. Like a few bands were kind of doing it, but like it was really intermixed. But I didn't want to like go with the standard kind of like distortion tone, right? I just I didn't think that would sound right. So if you all that you can really hear, and then on Lap Dance you'll notice on the main riff it's Fuzz Factory. So it's a pedal that's made by Zvex, and
I don't think they still make them though, right?
No, they do. They do make them, and Zvex is huge now. So back then they weren't huge. He's the guy who started the whole hand painting of the pedals and stuff like that. That was really Tommy.
Wow.
Tommy, the CEO of the company. So he started making all these, like, he made this Zvex Fuzz Factory, and it's like, it's a fuzz pedal, but it's got a compressor and a gate on it. So it just goes, and it kind of cuts itself.
Yeah.
So when you set it up, and it's really finicky. It'll like make all these, like, if you hit it, it's super finicky pedal. But I love it, man. It's like literally like
one of my favorite sounds. It's like crunchy in all the right ways, but like it doesn't lose definition. Yeah, that's what's amazing about
it. It's just like literally my 57 Tele plugged into the Fuzz Factory, plugged into a matchless.
Wow.
Yeah.
And simple.
That's the same matchless I have, same Tele I have. I lost that one that Fuzz Factory got stolen or something, but I've had multiple Fuzz
Factories. I feel like I could, that's the one sound I could have 100 different kind of fuzz pedals.
Yeah, you can set it up a lot of different. I have it set so it's just always like kind of like a, you know, it just kind of hits us. Well, and partially too, like if you listen to the digital version. So around that time, Pharrell and Chad were using this kind of, like, they wanted it. They were like intending it to be like a distorted guitar sound. It was really a sound that was from the O1W as a distorted clavinet. So that you can hear that. I think that's the same clavinet, distorted clavinet that's on the intro of both Lap Dances. And I was kind of looking for something in that similar thing. So something that was tight and spiky, you know?
Yeah, but it would complement it when it's doubled.
Yeah, it would complement it. And that's the thing too, because I end up like a lot of times if Chad or Pharrell have a part that they wrote, all like, even if it's on keyboard, we'll keep that in because there's something about the way that they play.
Well, it's hooky.
It's just like...
Like what I loved about that, it's like you gravitated towards the hooks and you made them accents.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of like subtly puts that, you know, instilled in your brain until it's like tattooed, you know?
Exactly, yeah. So I'll double everything with them, get it locked up, and then, yeah.
It's funny that song is from, 18 years ago? Something like that?
Yeah.
Because to me, it's like, oh yeah, I remember this like being such a sound.
I know. And it's stuck around. We, like, it was interesting when we're out on the road now, like, if you find, like, fans at the shows who don't know that stuff, that's kind of interesting because we're so not used to that, you know? I'm not used to getting up on stage and playing after, you know, little whoever, little whatever anxiety, depression medication you're named after. I don't know. You know, like the young guys and their fans like don't know any of that. You're like, whoa, this is kind of weird. Like you're like,
this is new, but it's old, but it's new and it's old.
I'm not used to it. But it's interesting, man. But yeah, that stuff still stands up really well. People love it. Like that was a,
well, and you know what? What I love is when guitar players, especially because I'm a guitar player, when they have tones dialed in. Like, I remember seeing you at Coachella, and I think I've told you this like maybe 10 times.
Yeah.
But I remember seeing you at Coachella and hearing you guys opened with Lose Yourself to Dance.
Yeah.
And you played the opening riff. You played the opening riff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just, I think it was just you.
Yeah.
And I just remember going, dude, that is insane guitar playing, and it's so simple, but it's not.
It's
the tone, it's the vibe, it's the timing, and it's the like just the whole atmosphere it creates. And I was like, that guy's a bad. You could just hear. I was like, that guy's a badass. Yeah, I even told my girlfriend that.
And with Pharrell, it is that. It's like, I mean, like I said, like those guys, like, man, they hear stuff really well, man. Like,
right.
They love those classic tones. So, like live, that gig, well, because I was in town, so I brought my 64 Strat, you know?
Right.
So I was like,
nice. Dude, you got Strat. An arsenal, man.
Yeah, so I brought that, and I don't really switch up guitars much, so I probably played that the whole night, and then my matchless that I recorded that song with, and I bring everything that I record with, like, I literally bring my mic pre's and my compressors, like, so I have nice mic pre's, I mic it up with a Royer and a
600. Nice.
Like, so I got it dialed in. Yeah, I got it. Like, my matchless sound is super dialed in, and I got all the nice, it's a nice chain. It's an expensive chain, but it just works, you know?
You just know you can count on it to do what it needs.
It's so, like, yeah, I tell people, like, capturing my matchless, that's easy. Like, I can set my amp and guitar up within 5 minutes, and it's
well, it's kind of like you also are looking for, like, that sound that you want to be your signature.
Yeah.
And now it is.
That was. And I always told people, like, I had, and still to this day, I have some friends, you know, like, you know, well, I really want to get an amp, Brent. Okay, well, what are you looking for? You know, like, oh, I'm looking for this kind of, like, a blues and da-da-da, something that kind of breaks up. Okay, well, this one, you know, you should get a matchless like mine. That does it just right. Well, that's $3,500. Well, then you don't have to buy another freaking app.
Right. But you know what? It's like you pay for what you get.
Yeah.
I walked into a guitar store the other day and I played a Vibralux and I just fell in love with it, man.
Yeah,
I was like,
man.
Dude, what is this? This is amazing. How much is this? And they're like $3,600. I was like, of course it is.
Yeah.
You get what you pay for.
I mean, yeah. When you're coming down to those small details, man, because it's almost like anything, man. It's like you pay a certain amount, right, to get to a really great level. And then everything beyond that, like that 1% costs $1,000,
yes,
kind of thing, right?
Yes.
Like, so
yes.
It's like I know, like, my matchless sounds great, but then you add the 57 to it. That's an expensive
guitar.
And
then it takes it up to a whole different.
It takes it up there.
But it's also like I'm sure you feel like this because I'm like this. It's like once you have that sound and you know it's there, you're at peace and you know that you can create and you know it's just all going to work because you're not thinking about, oh, it could use.
Yeah.
It's already there.
No, it's already there.
That's my favorite.
The thing is, get your basic sound right.
Like, right.
Get your whatever it is, and like usually like you said, like you will go into a store and you'll play something and it'll hit you. You know, you'll be just like, wow, that's what it was for my matchless. I was like, that's the sound I've been looking for. I had that whole thing. I'm gonna go try 100 amps, you know. But it was so silly because like.
Nothing compared.
I hit it, and I was like, that's it. Like,
and you're playing like the world stages. You're playing. Yeah, you know. You guys are headlining the biggest festivals.
Yeah.
And it's like when you have that sound, you know you're giving them a sound that's gonna get
that like my
inner depth of the soul.
Yeah.
You know?
The monitor guys, we have. I mean, you can imagine we have like the best monitor guys and front of house guys. You know, and they barely. Do anything. Like they might add a little high, like basically what I would do when I finish with the guitar recorded, I might add a little bit of high end or roll off the real low end, or you know what I mean, like very little touches, but they just put it right up, like, because I already have it compressed,
right,
I have it, you know,
right.
Everything just goes right to the
you're making their life easy.
Yeah.
Let's play something else. What do you want to play next?
What do you got up there?
I got Surfing, I got Snoop Dogg, California Roll, and I've got something else. Able.
Play California Roll.
All right. So tell us a little backstory about this.
So this is cool. I sent this one to you because this is kind of a fun story. This all came together. Pharrell did a full album for Snoop, and I remember coming in the studio and hearing like these tracks. Like, I was just like, you know, holy crap, man. Like, I was
insane.
Like, bro, because they're just super, like, this one's kind of mellow, but like a lot of them are just super funky. I was like, dude, I cannot wait to get on those. So I got the call to go in and start recording. Like, go in the studio, and I thought it works in different ways. And I thought this was going to be a session where I'd be on my own with, you know, the engineer, and that was Drew at the time. And we, so I get in there and I have a bunch of bunch of guitars. I rented a bunch of stuff too. I was like, I got to just try a bunch of different things for this stuff. And all of a sudden, like, I'm sitting there and Snoop comes in, you know, I'm like, oh shit, I didn't know Snoop was going to be here. Like,
you're like, this is awesome.
This is cool.
This just got elevated.
Yeah. And Pharrell pops in. I'm like, okay, so I don't know what's going on here. You know, I thought I was going to be recording. Maybe Snoop's recording. I might not be recording today. And then Snoop says to Pharrell, he says, yeah, Stevie will be here.
In five minutes. Only one Stevie.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, that can only mean, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and sure enough, yeah, and he's bringing his harmonica.
Holy shit.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, Stevie comes in. I was like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm sitting here right now. Dude. You know, like, it was insane. And there's a bunch of, there's, you know, it's a pretty good amount of people in the room. And, you know, and it comes down to, okay, well, we're gonna record, but they pull everybody out of the room except for me, Pharrell, Snoop, and the engineer.
Wow.
And Stevie's in the booth.
And you're just like, this is heaven right now?
I mean, I literally...
How did you not lose your shit?
I was losing my shit.
You're like, just play it cool, man. Just play it cool.
It was so crazy because I got to sit there and watch Stevie track, like, harmonica. I got to sit there and watch him sing.
Wow. Wow.
Sing parts, you know? Pharrell was just as blown away. Like at one point, Snoop was like, "Come on, Pharrell!" Like I think Pete, that you barely ever see him that blown. You know,
yeah,
he holds his cool really well. But like it was insane, man.
I remember you telling me like Snoop was asking. He was like almost like interviewing him. Like, tell me what you were doing in 1973 on this recording.
I was gonna say, yeah, it was the greatest thing, man. Snoop is an encyclopedia, man. Like he is. Man,
he knows his shit.
That boy, he loves music, yeah. Man. He loves music. He loves all kinds of music. He loves the history of it. I couldn't believe how much he knew of Stevie's stuff. And yeah, did you really like it? So when you wrote Tell Me Something Good, did you know you wanted to give it to Chaka Khan? You
wow, know, like, what a question,
you know,
dude.
Like, where were you when you wrote such and such song?
Right.
Well, I was in my, you know, I was in my mom's basement or, you know, like, it was just insane.
And you're just sitting there like, just be quiet and listen.
I mean, it was crazy.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was nuts, man. It was so great, man. Snoop was just like, you know, just the huge fan that just got the time to like sit and ask Stevie all these questions.
Well, you're like legends amongst legends.
Yeah.
And then you used to hear the best stuff. You hear the best stories.
It was unbelievable, man. It was unreal. But yeah, so he came in and just laid this stuff down. And it was great to see somebody like Stevie in the booth, like see what his process was.
Right.
See what
right.
he goes through and, you know, find his stuff and, yeah, he was just chill, hung out there, was playing and keyboards, like, just
you're like, pinch me, dude. I came from North Dakota, and here I am with
insane.
Snoop, Pharrell, and Stevie Wonder.
I went home, had to get, got like an hour, I don't even know if I slept, cause, you know, got like packed up, and then I had to be back at the airport and fly out, like, so I didn't even, like, I'm not thinking, but I was like,
you're wired
I
at that point.
I don't
point.
Care.
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
it's just an illusion at that point.
So, yeah, so this track was like, this one's special because, like, you know, I'm playing on a track with Pharrell and Snoop and Stevie Wonder, and it's like, geez.
Here it comes.
Just acoustic guitar. It's kind of tucked in there, but beautiful song, though.
Ladies and gentlemen, tickets, please.
Greetings, Hellcats and Mops. I'm your pilot, Canoeist 420. You are now on board the Dog Speeder Express, your ride to future Los Angeles. This is a high-velocity airbus. All passengers are required to wear a safety restraint. Photography is not permitted. That means you jive turkey. Be respectful. We have a wonderful musical legend on board with us. Without further ado, welcome to the future.
talking about love you. I'm talking about me and you. So if you wanna go to Melrose, let's sit at Adidas, girl, we got our own shell toes. And then we'll go to Venice. You roll so good, you might as well let me hit it for like 15 minutes. Girl, you're never gonna forget it. And if you wanna go around town, I can show you where all the real get it. And if you wanna go downtown, you might as well roll with a real hitter. I'm not talking about them fools, I'm talking about me and you. Baby, you can be a movie star. Hey, get yourself a medical card. Yeah, cause that's how California rolls. They do the fingers like Red Fox. Hey, you can make it on the light blue box. Yeah, cause that's how California rolls. Oh, yeah. And when I hand you that weed, I ask if you can roll. You say no, let me show you around there. Cowgirl, hold up, roll with a winner rodeo. With a winner rodeo lounge, yeah. Ain't got nothing to lose. I'm talking about me and you. And girl, I got a home in the valley, and a rose in the valley. Just tell them what my name is. You heard about me, you heard all about me, and you heard all the hitters that I'm with, gang bang, yeah. But I ain't talking about the news. Girl, you know that I'm talking about you. Let me show you all around. I can show you where all the real get it. And if you wanna go downtown, you might as well roll with a real hitter. I'm not talking about them fools, I'm talking about me and you.
Baby, you can be a movie star. Hey, get yourself a medical card. Yeah, cause that's how California rolls. They do the fingers like that box. Hey, you can make it on the light blue box. Yeah, cause that's how California rolls. Oh, yeah, LA.
Dude, so good. Yeah, it's killer, so smooth. Too, it's such a great song, dude.
It's killer, right?
Dude, it's just got this smooth vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
Man.
The whole album is killer. It didn't get pushed much. It just,
you know, unfortunately, there's record label people that they don't know.
Yeah,
they don't know. There's so much good art that's not pushed.
I thought that album would do. Yeah, it just, I didn't really hear much about it. Like,
right.
But it's a really cool record.
Well, you look at like Jellyfish. You know, like,
yeah.
That record didn't get pushed because Nirvana got pushed. And that's still a huge record that people don't know about. You know, we're running out of time. I want to get your handles.
Okay.
If people want to find you, you're doing an online teaching thing.
Yeah. So, I think it's just Brent Paschke at all of them. Like,
spell it out because people are dumb.
Yeah.
That's all right.
So it's Brent. Paschke.
Okay.
Like
those are all your socials.
That's all my socials. Yeah, I'm terrible at that stuff, man.
Dude, that's because you and I we're old guys, dude.
I'm trying to see if like but I think that's it. Yeah, it's just Brent Paschke. And
what's up next? You guys are touring, playing some shows. You guys are always working on records and touring.
I don't know. I mean, like it's always, you know, Pharrell or Chad's call. I'm never like you might go in and record some stuff and you think it's going to be one thing and it ends up being, you know, like I thought like the stuff from Hidden Figures, the movie was going to be a second. I thought that was possibly a second Pharrell
Right.
Or another Pharrell album, like solo album after the Girl album with Happy. But then it turned out being the soundtrack for Hidden Figures, the movie. Like, so I don't really know, you know, like he doesn't.
That record's one of my favorites. Girl is one of, it's such a great record.
It's a great record, right?
So awesome. Yeah. All the records, you've been so fortunate. You've made like three iconic, four or five different iconic records.
Yeah, some great stuff.
Really insane. Like most people are lucky to get on one, and you've been on so many, man.
I've been on a lot with him, yeah.
You're going to have to come back and be a guest, man. I told you, I warned you, I'm like, the best interviews when it seems like you can do a 10-hour interview.
Yeah.
And it's like, I was like, man, we're already out of time, but... Yeah. You're gonna come back.
We'll get back, man.
We're gonna get back and we're gonna get on the good foot again. And you got to bring in more music, because man, I could talk music with you all day, man.
Thanks, Nikki. Appreciate it, man.
You're the man, dude. And you know what? If you want to check out Brent Paschke, Brent Paschke to all of his socials: BrentPaschke.
Yep.
All right. On behalf of Ronan and myself, we'll see you guys next week.